Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spatch.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going good. What are we drinking tonight?
Champagne.
And why would that be?
It's our 10th anniversary. Today, as we're recording this, 10 years since we put our very first episode out.
Sean's lovely wife, Tracy, bought us a bottle of champagne to celebrate.
And so we're
I'm sipping half a glass so I can drive, but Sean has to drink all the rest.
I'm not a big champagne fan, but I will take one for the team. Whatever didn't end up on my pants and the floor. And
yeah, so we thought about, I said, make sure you don't aim it at the light bulb and make sure you know where the cork's going to go. And there's probably a dent in the ceiling. But one thing we didn't, I don't open a lot of bottles of champagne. Anyways, it foamed all over the place on the carpet.
It was not me that actually opened it.
No.
Derek?
Well, you couldn't open it. I had to help you.
Well, I was trying to do it because I knew that was going to pop off. So try and do it nicely.
Yeah.
And then you let me in there and kaboom, off goes the cork, up goes all the champagne all over the place.
And I had it in my hand.
Dog even got...
It was foaming, going crazy. I had it in my hand and I didn't know what to do. I panicked, so I pulled it away from the table so it would just...
Go all over the floor.
All over the carpet.
Into the carpet. That's awesome, Derek. Never trust Derek in a panic situation.
I was trying to save the table.
Oh, no, there's a bear in camp. Throw the steak at him! We're in a panic, Derek. Throw the little can. It'll hold them off.
The gas can caught on fire. Throw it in the fire pit.
Throw it in the fire pit. Keep the fire in the fire pit.
Oops.
It was good.
Anyway.
So, yeah, 10 years ago.
Happy 10 years, man.
10 years ago on RenoViolaOutdoors.
Yep. .com.
Online radio station.
That was a long time ago.
We've done so much since then.
We have.
It's been great. Groovy, even.
It has. It's kind of like become my poker night.
Right.
Or dart night, or whatever you want to call it.
Beer drinking night.
Yeah.
Champagne drinking
there
night.
There you go.
Joke night.
Yeah. We've had a lot of those.
It's all around night. Yeah. No responsibilities night.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all good.
Well, it's actually coming in handy because I like to take a nap before coming here, so I don't cook supper on Tuesday nights. And so the kids have had to learn how to feed themselves.
Ah.
And it's progressing well. Tonight, they made...
Crackers and water.
Pasta and meatballs. So
cooked?
Well,
or just raw and frozen.
I had all the bits and pieces ready for them.
Crunchy
there's some
pasta,
there's some sauce, there's some pre-made meatballs that I made on the weekend and they just had to boil the pasta and mix it all together and
see? There's more to this night than meets the eye.
Stella's very good at feeding herself. She'll do up a bowl of noodles, boil some eggs and put some hard-boiled eggs in with her noodles with sauces and whatever. And Beckett is like, can I put some chicken fingers in the oven? It's like, okay, don't burn the house down.
Tuesday nights, the night of toast and cereal.
Exactly.
It's breakfast for dinner.
Girls at a young age, girls tend to be a lot smarter, especially at a younger age. Like, I imagine Beckett will probably mature when I did at about the age of 26. So.
Oh, so you were an early bloomer.
Yes. People, I seen t-shirts, it's like, people confuse me as an adult due to my age.
I need to get some adult supervision, but you are an adult. Oh.
Darn it.
So you would assume. Mighty bold of you to assume.
Excuse me, sir. Where's your mother? Anywho.
Anyway. All right. All the hoopla's over. Let's get on with the show.
So this is episode 522.
522.
Yeah.
That's a lot of episodes.
It has been a lot.
We've been told this is the longest running paddling podcast.
I was Googling it as we were coming up to this. I was looking at some stuff and And we're routinely listed in like the top 5, top 10, top 15 outdoors podcasts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
We're usually top 5.
Somebody's listening to us.
Right?
Not just my mother.
Well, according to our stats, there's at least close to 2,000 a week downloading. So
mm-hmm.
it's got to be somebody out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to be somebody. Or else somebody just really, really likes it and downloads it 2,000 times a week.
So I guess now we announce the fact that this is our last episode ever.
Yep. Thanks for listening. Good night. 10 years.
I know.
That's a lot of beer.
I never thought we'd get this far.
No.
Hmm.
No. Thought we would have given up about year two. We would have had 8 years of not doing this.
The first few years were really tough. They were, we weren't so, I was very uncomfortable recording. It was very weird for me. I don't like hearing my own voice. I don't listen to the podcast because I don't like my own voice. I can hear my Maritimes accent when I listen to myself. And it's like,
I don't listen to it because I don't like your voice either.
Awesome. But yeah, so it, like I remember early on, sometimes, some weeks I would be here 3 nights a week trying to get enough material to record.
Right.
And now we go, oh, there's not enough. The next thing you know, it's an hour and a half podcast. It's like, oh, how did that happen?
Right.
Because we ramble too much now. We're getting more comfortable with it.
Finally.
Now's the time to go commercial.
Right?
We've never made a penny off this thing.
No. No, we've gotten some free gear and
here and
free
there.
Beers and stuff like that. So, but, I mean, we're not, as much as we'd love to make the cash doing it and get all the airline tickets and
I know.
And all that sort of stuff, I think that might take some of the shine off.
Yeah.
Not all the shine, just some.
I think we gave up on the commercials. We used to do free commercials just because it made us sound professional. We have a commercial. But we never get paid for them.
No. Well, we got a couple of freebies stuff from Algonquin Outfitters.
Did
back
we?
In the, when Randy was there. Yeah, he'd send us some free stuff.
I didn't get anything.
Yeah, we used to give it away.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't us for us then. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've often gotten things from Sail, and Sail has been very supportive. So is Algonquin Outfitters. They gave us stuff to give away.
Yeah.
And, but we've never kept any of the stuff. It's always given it all away.
Yeah.
I remember when I used to do the Explore Box from Explore Mag, it was, I used to give all that stuff away too.
Because we didn't like half of it.
It's like, what kind of crap is this?
This garbage.
I guess we're giving this away.
Hey, let's put this in a box and give it away to people that buy it so that they can give it away to people. Yep. Nah, there was stuff in there we liked.
Yeah.
But there was other things that were just like, oh. What was it? Was it the birch water?
That wasn't too bad. It was
there
different.
There was something in there that just was nasty.
It stuck to the side of your tongue. It does come from a tree.
I'm sure that was it that we just both... wasn't it? We looked at it and we tasted it and then we both said, yeah, this is going down the laundry.
Yeah, tub. It wasn't that great.
Yeah.
But I think we've thrown away more beers than we have birch water.
Yeah.
Blame me for that one.
We'll blame you for that one.
I made a few poor choices in beers.
Yeah.
I can think of... Yeah, I remember a couple of times where it was like, oh, what is wrong with this beer? This is I picked up a sour beer from a local place and it was more of a, personally, I would use that beer. It was a sour beer. It's more of a joke beer. You buy those beer and give them to friends as Christmas gifts and say, enjoy.
Right? And then with the straight face, make sure that they're telling you with a straight face, oh, those were awesome beers. You liar.
So those really sour patch candies or sour candies, the ones that are just obnoxiously sour, the beer was like that.
Yeah.
It was not good.
There's not very many that you've missed on over the years.
No. The German...
I can probably talk one hand, the ones that you...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The key one was I picked it because it was a interesting looking label. It was like, oh, I just pick up a bunch of German beers. And this one was, kosher, gluten-free, alcohol-free...
Kosher,
gluten-free,
alcohol-free, Something. Oh, now we're forgetting.
Oh, what's if I describe it, people get mad at me. But it was a thing. Certain foods have to be cooked a certain way, prepped a certain way.
Yeah, it's kosher.
Kosher.
Yeah,
kosher, gluten free, alcohol free,
alcohol free.
Whatever it was, and it was taste free. It was taste free as well.
And taste free. Yeah.
Yeah. I got thrown away.
Yeah. Yeah. We couldn't even give that away.
No.
Hey, for our next giveaway. Yeah, well, I'd like to give these beers back to this beer store. No. No. But no, I'm giving them back. I don't want my money back.
No.
Ah, the good times.
Yep.
10 more years to go.
There we go.
Yeah, maybe we'll call it at the end of 20 years. Yeah. We'll see. See what happens when the time comes. Well, let's get on with this week's show then, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Registration is open for those that are down on the west coast of the U.S. Tahoe Environmental Research Center circumnavigate Lake Tahoe for science. Say that 10 times real fast. June 22nd and 28th.
Acronym? T-E-R-C-C-L-T-S.
Turk Circ 6. Uh-huh. Wow. The 6th annual UC Davis Tahoe Environmental Research Center, TURC, circumnavigate Lake Tahoe. TURC Circ 6. Fundraising event to support science around the lake and beyond while kayaking Lake Tahoe. The event will take place over 7 days. We talked about this last year. It was kind of cool. And there was some really good feedback on it. Starting Monday, June 22nd, concluding Sunday, June 28th. In addition to the day 6 to 13 miles of shoreline paddling, participants will get to see, share, and learn about Lake Tahoe ecology, geology, and emerging challenges. Turk's scientific experts will illustrate the science being used to restore Lake Tahoe. Come for just a day or two or join the ranks of the epic few who have completed the entire circumnavigation.
Interesting.
Space is limited.
Mm-hmm.
Paddlers will enjoy shuttle service from takeout points back to put-in points to retrieve your car. A pre-launch light breakfast on June 22nd. Demonstrations, discussions before each launch, covering everything from basic strokes to more advanced techniques and safety. A commemorative Turk Circ 6 gift.
Sounds like a t-shirt.
Right? Unique camaraderie of joining like-minded paddlers in doing a good turn for the lake. Sunday afternoon, June 28th, a complimentary celebratory party with your fellow paddlers to enjoy food, wine, and beer. Oh, I'd go just for that. If you want to, just Google Lake Tahoe for science and things will come up. Links will come up and get more information, more links and registration, that sort of thing. But, yeah, if you're into that sort of thing, that's perfect.
Very cool.
Get in. Space limited. Speaking of doing environmental and cleanups and stuff like that, sports retailer Decathlon and specialist sports insurer Sports Cover Europe are supporting Paddle UK's big paddle cleanup this year. Both companies played a significant role in making last year's Big Paddle Cleanup a record-breaking success. 2025 record number of volunteers, 4,228, took part in the event over 500 more than the year before.
Wow.
Individuals, clubs, delivery partners, community groups filled 2,129 sacks full of rubbish from canals and rivers. Within those sacks were 6,851 plastic bottles, 2,013 glass bottles, 4,059 cans, 10,804 food wrappers, and about 8,130 hours spent out on the waterways across the country to clean up rivers and canals.
So that's great that they've picked up and recovered so much trash.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's great. It's really good. But unfortunately, people are dumping this.
Yeah,
it's a uphill battle.
It is.
Like people have,
but it's everywhere
got
though.
To stop dumping garbage.
Staff from both partners took part in the events as well, helping to make the blue spaces free of plastic waste and other junk. And this year's big paddle cleanup will take place between May 23rd and June 7th. So it's not just a one-day thing. Chantel Grundy, Access Environment Manager, says Decathlon and Sports Cover Europe are passionate about the big paddle cleanup and the benefits it brings to our blue spaces and communities. They're not afraid to get on the water to help too, which is fantastic. Big thank you for their support again in 2026. If you want to be a part of that, go to paddleuk.org.uk for more info, or just Google big paddle cleanup. And you'll get a whole bunch of links to that as well. But again, it's people taking ownership of their their paddle areas, cleaning up what they can. And as I say, every little bit helps, right?
It does. It does. If we could get people to stop dumping in the first place, it would be great. But otherwise, like, and it's something that I encourage everybody to do. Every spring, I know here locally, there's a lot of beach cleanup groups in your communities. There's always somebody somewhere that's doing a beach walk, a river walk, a river cleanup, and so on. So it's something that's good to participate in and give a little bit back to the environment that we all love so much.
Do you think it'd make a difference if they were allowed to use tasers on people they see littering?
I think that would be nice.
If you see somebody throw a Coke can into the river, that would be so awesome. Tase somebody, tase a litter bug, and you clean up their litter.
Yeah.
Tase That's litter your bug. Reward for cleaning up somebody else's litter. You get to tase them. Yeah.
Cattle prods.
Right? That'd be beautiful. You had little cattle prods along the riverbank. You just go grab one, run up. Bzzack. No, just one. But there's five just pieces once. Of garbage.
Just once.
One. Bzzk, two. Bzzk. That'd be groovy. I'm just saying. That's why they don't put me in charge.
Exactly.
Sort of on the same sort of thing.
And this one's interesting.
This one is interesting because I've never thought about this. So one scientist is on a mission to reveal the far-reaching spread of microplastics after kayaking around a remote glacier in Greenland.
In Greenland?
Armed with just a kayak and a self-built microplastic filter, Christian Lewis Jensen spent the last decade paddling through the most pristine places on our planet. During his master's degree in environmental protection, the Inuit scientist developed the Plastsack. Science Citizen tool allows kayakers and local communities to collect surface water samples containing debris from items such as abandoned bottles and packaging.
Hmm.
Okay, which is normal.
Yep.
But that work led me to a deeper question about the invisible footprint of humanity, he says. It is this that inspired his most recent trip over a remote glacier into eastern Greenland. Jensen kayaked to one of the most isolated corners of the Arctic, located hundreds of kilometers from any kind of road. He expected to find fibers and general plastic debris, which he did, but he also stumbled upon traces of car tire particles in his samples.
This one is kind of disturbing that it's so far from people and humans.
Right. I mean, even if it was just the cars in Greenland, there's not
just not a lot
not
of people.
Tons.
There's
right?
about 55,000 people in Greenland.
Finding them on a pristine glacier in eastern Greenland was a shock because it validated a terrifying thesis. These particles are no longer just an urban issue, he says. They have become dust, airborne, and have traveled thousands of kilometers to the Arctic. This is a fossil fuels in motion. It tells us that the Arctic is a sink for the world's pollution. With more than 5 billion tires on the road globally, each loses around 10-30% of its mass during its lifespan. The mass doesn't disappear. It breaks down into toxic dust that settles at the very start of our food chain. Jensen's work has highlighted the far-reaching extent of microplastics, which are starting to cause a trifecta of problems for local communities in Greenland. Ecology, ecologically, we're seeing early evidence that tire toxicity is high for Arctic species, he explains. For instance, chemicals like 6-PPD are lethal to the coho salmon. Car tire pollution can also cause deformities in Atlantic cod eggs, threatening the very foundation of the nation's fishing industry. Because you think your car tires, okay, well, I do a burnout on the road, it's stuck to the pavement,
the brakes too hard, yada, yada, yada.
That sort of thing. You figure, okay, well, wear and tear, but you don't actually think about
the runoff.
Where it is, runoff. It dries out, gets into the air, and where does it go?
Into any lakes and rivers. It all collects.
But that's what he's saying, is this tire dust heads way north in the Arctic.
Yeah, well, it, like, if you think about it, when we see forest fires, like we've seen smoke affect us from Quebec, from out west, and so on. And so the same thing is when winds pick up these really tiny, tiny particulate tire rubber that's in the air or any other pollutant, it gets caught up in the jet streams and gets carried everywhere. So what we're doing locally affects us planet-wide.
Mm-hmm. For indigenous communities, Greenland's polluted waters have become a matter of environmental justice that poses a serious health risk. In urban areas, chronic exposure to these kinds of particles has already been linked to a slew of health issues, such as worsening asthma and cardiac problems. In the Arctic, that threat is now settling on our food sources, turning a pristine environment into a repository for global waste. The higher latitudes and the people living in them are disproportionately being adversely affected by global pollution and climate change. Scientists have long warned of Greenland's growing microplastic issue, with multiple studies finding higher concentration of tiny particles in sea ice in these remote areas compared to infamous ocean garbage patches. So it's heading farther north in the Arctic from farther south.
Yeah.
Everything's heading north, migrating north.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird that it's doing that. Jensen argues that there is a critical blind spot in climate policy that aims to tackle this pervasive problem. Currently, we regulate what comes out of the tailpipe, but we ignore what wears off the tire. This is dangerous given that the tire particles are now recognized as a leading source of microplastics entering ecosystems globally. Momentum to transition away from fossil fuels rapidly gained traction at last year's COP30 summit in Belém, with more than 90 countries, including Germany, the Netherlands, and the UK, backing the idea of a roadmap. However, following a pushback from petrostates, all mentions of a phase-out were scrubbed from the final deal. Hope for a fossil fuel-free future now lies outside the UN's remit. In April, more than 85 countries will meet in Colombia's Global Fossil Fuel Phase-Out Conference, which will be co-hosted with the Netherlands. However, Jensen says the transition away from fossil fuels mainly focuses on black carbon. These are emissions that are generated from burning fuel. We need to broaden that to include carbon black, the fossil fuel-derived filler that makes up a massive portion of every tire.
Use the color of the tires black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to read this a few times because they're talking about black carbon, which is from your tailpipe, and then carbon black, which is from your tires. We cannot claim to be tackling the fossil fuel crisis if we ignore the solid petrochemicals rolling beneath our vehicles. And there's also growing support for more transparency among manufacturers. Jensen is therefore calling for a collaborative ecosystem where ecotoxicologists have full insight into the chemical cocktails that make up modern tires, because it's all trade secrets, right?
Because
why is one company's tire going to keep you on the road better and the others,
yeah.
And especially in winter tires and that sort of stuff. Taking down fossil fuel giants and huge corporations is no easy task, one that Jensen can't manage on his own. It's why he's launching the Black Carbon Scientific Coalition at the Arctic Frontiers Conference this month. Core of his campaign is the formation of a cross-sector science coalition to monitor black carbon and carbon black in the Arctic and its effect on the health of the Arctic. The coalition will bring together toxicologists, indigenous leaders, and policymakers to investigate the specific impacts of the tire particles on Arctic health in hopes to take this evidence to the EU Parliament and to COP31 later this year. Our ultimate goal is to secure national and international commitments to reduce and mitigate black carbon and tire particle emissions. Well, something new to add to the talk. So, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things you don't really think about, and it's also one of those things that's like, how do you deal with this? Like, we need tires on our cars.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, I'm sure there's lots of solutions out there. Somebody's going to come up with something. I'm not going to be this guy that solves this, but it's one of those things. It's wooden tires.
Wooden tires.
It's a rough ride.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be smooth as long as you get your point A to point B. Yeah, there's going to be something that comes up that, you know, hopefully they can eliminate this.
Yeah.
But.
And it really comes down to how the manufacturers change the way they do manufacturing.
You know, I think all this could be solved with, like, once they get that levitating car.
There you go.
And yeah. That gets it right out of the picture. I don't think we're spending enough Jetsons. Money on that sort of land speeder from Star Wars, that sort of technology. We've definitely got to. And like I say, the fact that it's heading that far north.
I know.
And they're finding it in all their samples and stuff like that. That it's just not something you think about when you're driving your car.
It never occurred to me.
Yeah. You're thinking about the stuff that's coming out of your tailpipe.
Yeah.
Right? But the fact that, you're not thinking about what's coming off your tires.
The rubber coming off your tires, people spinning tires, people doing burnouts. That stuff floats up in the atmosphere and gets carried far north. Mm-hmm. 100,000 years from now, some scientist is going to be, this is the layer of the glacier that came from the early 2000s.
Right? Interesting. Very interesting. Are you rich?
No.
Well, come on. We're drinking champagne tonight. We're rich today.
I didn't pay for it.
That makes two of us. For all I know, she just yelled, "Start the car!"
Yeah.
7 of the world's most luxurious kayaking holidays. So all corners of the world.
Yes.
And all involve very expensive hotels.
Yeah. So we're talking.
We're not talking kayak holiday sleeping in a tent.
Yeah. We're not roughing it here. This is not roughing it. This is 4.5-5-star hotels and restaurants in very beautiful places in the world.
Remote
places.
All inclusive.
I think that's the key part. A lot of these are very remote locations.
Yes.
Off grid or near off grid. And so it's.
Not places most people are going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Lizard Island Resort, Australia.
We did look. There's at least one lizard on this island.
We saw
a photo.
We saw one picture of one lizard. apparently, they have monitor lizards, skinks, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
True haven for nature lovers, secluded Lizard Island Resort sits on the rugged northernmost fringes of the Great Barrier Reef, surrounded by an extraordinary array of photogenic flora and fauna, much of it best explored by kayak. Guests can choose between traditional kayaks, easily paired with snorkeling gear, or glass-bottom versions that make spotting colorful giant clams, mesmerizing shoals of fish, and hypnotic marine plant life effortless. From the water or on foot, it's possible to reach all 24 secluded beaches that ring the island, accessible only by private charter. The all-inclusive relay and chateau property is intentionally intimate, with just 40 rooms and suites. Its architecture leans towards a refined, brutalistic aesthetic. Ooh, dark polished concrete floors, rosewood timber accents, and a striking exterior defined by perforated copper blades and narrow slit windows. Hot diggity dog!
It sounds awesome.
Right? No kids allowed, I bet. So these are places that you're not just hopping a bus and going.
No.
You're getting in there on a private yacht or a plane or something like that. But yeah, and some of these we look for prices. If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
I did the one on this list that I actually specifically looked into because I was like, oh, I'd go there. And there was no easy way to find prices. I imagine if I had Googled the right search terms, somebody would have gone there and they would have posted somewhere is what it cost. But you can't find it from them because I would have had to email them and inquire on a stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We looked at one place and it said, you will need a second mortgage on your house.
Yes. But these are all very nice locations, very yes. pristine locations, and like either beach or internal lake or whatever. It's like rainforest, and a lot of them are very lovely. And we've only touched the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, right now.
And this one here in Lizard Island, I looked, were there snakes? Yeah, there's a couple of snake species there.
Yep.
Best viewed from afar, you think? Like, I'm sorry, but I see a monitor lizard coming at me.
Yeah.
That's best viewed from afar as well.
Yeah.
I hope they can't swim.
I think they can.
Number two, the kayak and safari break. Taru Vilas Vilu Wilpatu in Sri Lanka. While the area surrounding Taru Vilas Vilu Wilpatu is best known for its safaris, drawing visitors eager to glimpse the elusive leopards of Sri Lanka's largest national park, wildlife encounters aren't confined to the game drives. Nature unfolds right within the hotel grounds. Striking endemic birds can be spotted from private plunge pools. Snakes occasionally slither past the architectural marvel that is the restaurant. All right, take this one off my list. And at the rear of the property, a wooden deck opens onto a khaki-colored river where guests can kayak in solitude, sometimes sharing the water's edge with a wandering Asian elephant. New elephant!
Yeah.
Part of the small luxury hotels of the World Collection, Taru Vilas Vilu Wilpatu is an intimate retreat of just 7 luxury chalets, each generously sized and simply styled in muted earthy tones. It's an ideal place to unwind after a day spent on the river kayaking amongst the tropical countryside of Sri Lanka's west coast.
It would be nice to kayak there.
It would be. Lake Petén Itzá, Guatemala. Serene and suitable Lake Petén Itzá unfurls directly from the grounds of northern Guatemala's newest Lux Bolt hole, Bolantico. Close to the ancient and most must-visit jungle-shrouded ruins of Tikal. Ideal for those who want to combine kayaking with an immersion into Guatemalan Mayan temples and history, which, you know, who doesn't want to do that?
Right.
Retreat offers 2 bed villas as well as sublime lake view suites with all the amenities typical of a boutique property. Worth getting up early to kayak during sunrise when the lake surface, framed by lush tropical vegetation, morphs from a tin can gray to tangerine orange and dusty pink. Afterwards, refuel on locally grown fresh fruit, soul-warming coffee, and corn tortillas, served with refried beans, sweet plantains, and eggs. For kayak-weary limbs, the hotel's on-site spa does much to revive achy muscles, as well as blasting jet lag away with lengthy signature massages, sauna, and steam baths.
I wouldn't be doing, well, to each their own, but I'd be there for the kayaking and not necessarily the massages.
I'm not a spa-y person.
Neither am I.
I'll go there for the kayaking and all that, but mm-hmm. I don't like, especially when it comes, oh, let's go for a massage. Yeah, let's not. I don't want somebody manhandling me while I'm on holidays.
Yeah, but your wife would do that.
Oh, she's all into the spas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the massages. And you know, when we went to the Blue Lagoon there in...
Oh, yes, in Iceland.
In Iceland there, she went in for the massage sort of thing, and I'm just like, no, I'm just going to hang out and... putter around in a big old hot springs yeah. thing pool there, and they walk around with these different muds they give you, and
oh, okay.
some are lava muds and some are mud muds and some are I don't know whatever yeah. muds, and you put them on your face and your whatever, and okay, whatever, I'll do that sort of thing. But yeah, no, I'm just not a spa, and I'm not a sauna type person at all. So, but hey, if that's your thing, then maybe Guatemala is your place. Balantiku Boutique Hotel.
With a lot of these that we're reading through, and we're only partway through the list, like these are high-end resorts, so they're going to be centered on spa getaways and kayaking getaways. And so it is heavily into that luxury vacation style type thing.
Yeah.
But again, I'd be there for the kayaking.
Yes, 100%. Kea Island in Greece, set in the serene Psathi Bay on the quietly enchanting island of Kea. This part of the Greece offers some of the most beautiful kayaking waters in the Cyclades. Rugged mountain peaks slope gently into the Aegean, framing glassy seas, secluded coves, untouched shorelines, all of which are best explored slowly by kayak from Kea Retreat.
We dug into this one a little bit just because I was wondering, like, hey, how much rain do they get? Like, where do they get water? And and because when you look at the island itself, when you get, if you get it at, the, at an appropriate altitude above it on Google Maps, it looks like a crumpled up piece of paper. And it's all very dry and arid. And they do have a fair amount of rain. Some of these locations, the rainy season, they get up, you know, 17, 18 inches of rain per year. But yeah, it's it would be a beautiful island to go to. You're on the Aegean, and it just to be in a Greek resort and and it's very isolated. Like this island itself is like southeast off of Greece itself,
hour from the mainland.
Yeah, it's a beautiful location, and it would be very neat to get out there and kayak into the ocean, into the Aegean Sea.
Yeah. Just 7 beautifully appointed bedrooms, some with outdoor showers and bathtubs, celebrated for its unspoiled nature and stunning cuisine. Kea remains a well-kept secret. Not anymore.
We burst that one.
Usually hosting week-long retreats during the summer months. Yet it's also open to shorter individual hotel stays, too, where days slip by easily under olive branches and sunbeams. Yoga and meditation can also be arranged.
James Bond would stay at one of these locations.
This is what I'm, yeah, I'm picturing James Bond staying here until all of a sudden he gets the, if you choose to accept it. Oh, isn't that Mission Impossible?
Yes, it's Mission Impossible. Yeah. It's all the same.
It's all the same guy, just different TV shows. All right, how about the secluded country estate, the Torridon, Scotland? Defined by crisp mountain air and sublime scenery, this sprawling highland retreat truly feels like something out of a dream. This would be more my style.
It would be. Now, when you think of Scotland, you think of, oh, open ocean. I wouldn't do that. But this is not open ocean.
No.
It's an inlet. It's a. Yep. It's almost like a lake, but it is still open to the ocean. But it's a nice location inland of Scotland.
Beyond its breathtaking setting, the estate offers an impressive array of activities and experiences, from falconry and stargazing to gorge scrambling. I'd love to do the falconing.
That'd be neat.
Right?
That'd be neat.
It's also one of the most beautiful places to go kayaking, with a glassy loch encircled by towering peaks and teeming with wildlife. While gliding across the mirrored surface of Loch Torridon and the surrounding areas, guests can expect to witness soaring white-tailed sea eagles, glossy cormorants, playful otters, and even curious seals. Bedrooms are spaced across the main part of the historic hotel, old stables, and a boathouse, each designed individually with luxurious fabrics or touches of tartan. Many retain charming period features, particularly those in the original building, while others offer indulgent touches such as freestanding bathtubs. Forest Green Master Suite, dating back to 1887, is especially striking, having been sensitively restored to an exceptionally 5-star standard.
The age of these things, eh?
Right? So that's like if your wife's into Outlander, the TV show.
Exactly, right?
You're taking her there. She's in her glory. You get to go kayaking with otters and
seals.
Find
an old castle or some ruins to walk through.
Right? She can go around touching stones, going, come on, take me back in time.
So of all the ones, this is one of the two that I really interested yeah. me.
Hidden within Italy's first WWF-affiliated nature reserve amid the Apennine Mountains in Tuscany, Oasi Hotel utilizes luxury wooden lodges to allow guests a full immersion into nature.
I can't see WWF without thinking World Wrestling Federation.
They went to court over that, too.
I know.
Set within 1,000 hectares of pristine wilderness, nature beckons from all angles with forest bathing and wild swimming both encouraged. Yet it is kayaking options that really wow. Taking to the calm waters of private San Vito Lake, guests have been known to catch glimpses of wild deer, Apennine wolves, and elegant golden eagles. Back on dry land, the hotel's on-site farm organic vegetable garden supply both restaurants La Felci and Casa Luigi, where local seasonal produce and traditional Tuscan flavors are whipped up into Moorish dishes that are not only wholesome, but nourishing.
Nice.
Art lovers will adore the newly installed Oasi Contemporary Art Trail, where site-specific artworks are celebrated artists and sculptors such as Kengo Kuma and Mateo Toon dot a scenic route through the protected forest.
Very nice.
That sounds really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be second on my list.
Yeah, I'd be third on my list. Scotland would be second. The next one that we're about
Scotland
to talk to.
Scotland would be first. This one, that would be second. This next one would be third because I can get there.
This one would be number one for me. This was one that I actually looked into and couldn't find prices because you had to ask.
That's why this one's not on my list. Set on one of the most breathtaking stretches of the Great Bear Rainforest, Fawn Bluff defines the ultimate luxury kayaking escape. Just an hour north of Vancouver by seaplane or helicopter. Okay, if you got to get there by helicopter, you can't afford it. Hence, it's not on my list. This once hidden lodge sits on 340 acres between the wildlife-rich Pacific Ocean and the serene private waters of Lisk Lake. Kayaking provides a front row seat to nature's wild theater, since black bears forage along the shoreline, otters play, bald eagles dive for salmon. After a day on the water, return to the Douglas fir-clad main house, where every room opens to sweeping views of Butte Inlet, or retreat to the secluded lake cabin with its private dock for swimming and sunset paddles, available only as a complete buyout.
You can't rent one room in the cabin.
You gotta rent the whole cabin. So this is some pretty cool place, but I think, the Scotland and the Tuscany one, I think, would be the two I would go for, I think.
Fawn Bluff, this British Columbia one, I really would like to go to that one.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in BC for a while. I kind of know what the area is like. You get familiar with the. It's one of the things I remember before I moved back to Ontario from British Columbia. You get used to driving to work, to and from work, seeing the snow-capped mountains in the Rockies, and it's like you're looking up. Oh, but then you get immune to it. It's like you forget to look, and it's a view you see every day to and from work, so you don't really think about it. But before I moved back here, I was like, oh.
Well, it's funny because you get used to the big landmarks that the rest of the world, like here, hey, let's go to the Tin Tower, let's go to Niagara Falls.
Boring.
Been there, done that. Yeah. Right? But for people that don't live in this area.
Exactly. It's what they want to see.
My brother lived in Calgary and we went out there. He'd been out there for a few years. Hey, I want to check this out. It's not all that great. I don't care because you've seen it six times. That's why it's not all that great anymore. Yeah. I've never seen it. Right? So, yeah. It all depends on if you've been there or you get used to the area, right? Yeah. People, you guys seen the locks going from all through the Great Lakes systems? That's awesome.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Not really.
Been there, done that. Anyways, when I get back from this place in Fawn Bluff, British Columbia, I'll tell everybody about it.
Right. Wait, aren't you going to the Bowron Lakes?
I am.
And are you not going to the Nahani?
I am.
Now you got to add this to your list, too?
I do.
Excellent. Hi, this is Derek. I'm poor.
Exactly.
I've got no money.
But, you know, some of the, I usually pick cheaper, more cost-effective. Like the Bowen Lake Loop is, it's not that expensive. It's airfare and camping, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
Or if you got somebody that'll drive you out there.
Yes.
You could sleep the entire way. And they could just drive and drive and drive. You need to find one of those companies that, you know, we need somebody to drive a car from Toronto to Calgary.
There's companies that do that.
Right? That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So you throw a canoe on top. There's some camping gear in there.
Exactly.
And then you rent a car when you're there to get into BC. It'd be awesome.
Yeah. Something to look into.
Is there anybody that needs to fly a plane from Toronto to, say, Nepal? Let's look into that one next. Yeah. Putrajaya. I tried looking at this. That's one of the things that we if we find different places we talk about.
We
try to find videos where people talk about the places.
Yeah.
And there's sometimes we come across places like this that the only people talking about it are in the foreign language of the place. Well, foreign to us. So the language of that country that these things are happening. And some of them, they talk so fast you can't even pick out. And there's subtitles on what they're saying. And you listen to it and there's no way you can pick out what they're saying.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's Putrajaya or Putrajaya.
Putrajaya, Jaya, Yaya.
Canoe Marathon.
Putrajaya, anyways, it's
Canoe
in,
Marathon in Malaysia.
Putrajaya is, it's on Putrajaya Lake, and it is just south of Kuala Lumpur. So it's like a sister city, twin city area.
Mm-hmm. The Canoe Marathon 2026 concluded successfully the water sports complex in Precinct 6. Reinforcing the federal administrative capital's growing reputation as a key venue for competitive water sports in Malaysia. Organized by Perbad Danan Putrajaya in collaboration with Putrajaya Canoe Association, the event attracted 128 participants. Turnout reflected increasing enthusiasm for canoe marathon racing among both seasoned athletes and community participants. It's nice to see all over the world that people are getting an interest in water sports nowadays, a lot more interest in more than just kayaking, too. It seems because kayaking, stand-up paddleboard are the two biggies, right? But it's great to see people increasing the enthusiasm, as they say, for these different types of paddling. This year's edition featured three main categories: the K2 Open, TK2 Under 21, and the SOT2 Community. Range of categories allowed for broader participation, catering to experienced paddlers, emerging youth talents, and members of the local community. So you got the ones that are already established paddling, that sort of stuff. You got the younger people that want to get to that level to come out and participate. And then you got people who are just regular people that want to come out, try it, give it a whirl, and see how well they do. K2 Open category delivered intense competition with pairs demonstrating strong paddling techniques, effective coordination, and strength endurance management throughout the race. Synchronization and stamina proved critical as competitors navigated the course around the lake. TK2 Under 21 category served as an important development platform for young paddlers aiming to build their competitive credentials. And the SOT2 Community category added a vibrant dimension to the event by encouraging wider public involvement. Although less elite in nature, the category maintained a competitive spirit while promoting inclusivity and active participation. Do you remember in school getting a participation? the participation program was huge.
In
younger grades, like 4, 5, 6.
That was a good program. I had a couple of those crests.
Badges.
Badges.
Gold, silver, bronze. Yeah. I had a couple of those. And you'd, You'd sew them on your jean jacket, yes. Right? Get mom to sew them on your jean jacket. And yeah, that was the whole thing. It's like, you know what? You get out there, you participate. The better you participate and that sort of stuff, the higher you get a gold, silver, bronze patch, depending on the qualification sort of thing. So yeah, we always try to get those. The water sports complex at Precinct 6, equipped with modern facilities, provide an ideal setting for the marathon. Its infrastructure ensured smooth event management and participation safety, and further established Putrajaya as a suitable host for large-scale sporting events. So that's them planning for the future, that maybe one day they get some, like a world championship or some sort of big event there, and they already have the infrastructure there. Beyond competition, the Putrajaya Canoe Marathon 2026 aligned with broader initiatives to promote healthy lifestyles, maximize the use of Putrajaya Lake as a recreational and sporting asset. The event also facilitated networking with experience sharing among athletes from different states, contributing to the strengthening of Malaysia's canoeing community. With strong participation and positive reception, the marathon is expected to remain a key fixture in Malaysia's water sports calendar. Success of 2026 edition signals continued momentum in the development of canoe racing, while reinforcing Putrajaya's status as a dynamic hub for aquatic sporting events. Good on them.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that people are coming out to enjoy it.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. It's a high density population in the area, south of Kuala Lumpur and stuff. When you look at this lake, the Putrajaya Lake, it's in a very modernized area, but it's a fairly large body of water mm-hmm. inland. And I think it would be like I always go to Street View and find images that people uploaded for locations. It's really neat to see this area. And I think it would have been really neat to see, you know, there'll be a lot of people on shore watching and a lot of participants. It's a really neat area.
It really is. So, yeah, hopefully that, you know, like you say, they got that now this year. It's and it was success that they can just keep it going and keep going and eventually. Like I say, once you get the infrastructure there, then who knows where it goes, right? After that.
Yeah.
Something else I came across here. When we talk about lately, like your Boundary Waters permits, getting in the lottery for that, the Grand Canyon permits, you know, getting in the lottery for that. Idaho features some of the most iconic multi-day rafting trips in the United States. The odds of pulling a permit in the Four Rivers Lottery are not good.
So, and your odds of getting in the lottery are not good. And then once you get the lottery, I assume it's just like the Grand Canyon. Like you get added to the lottery list for the Grand Canyon or so on. But you don't get to pick the week.
No.
Not necessarily.
Here's your time.
This is your time. This is when you're going, no. So it's just one of those things. These lotteries, these passes are very popular. A lot of people want them. And you see the same thing with, like, for example, here in Ontario Parks. Like, you wait to dial in at 7 a.m. You wait on the internet and
let me get my 7 dial a.m. phone
you log in and it's like, no, sorry, that campground is now fully booked. It's like, I just looked. They're like, you've been open for like 30 seconds. And yeah,
we didn't go winter camping, family day weekend. We usually do, but, the only spots we could get were in the pet free.
Oh yeah.
Radio free, pet free area. Mm. So I put in the little email thingies. If a spot comes available featuring what I'm looking for, let me know. I kept getting a whole lot of them. Because people were canceling their spots in the pet free.
Oh.
So I'd say, hey, there's a new spot opened up. Go check it out. I go check it out. It's in the pet free zone. And it's like, so yeah, trying to get something in the, there's so many people.
It's at Mew Lake, especially Family Day weekend, is very hard to get.
Yep.
Very popular.
Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main salmon, and the Selway and Hell's Canyon on the Snake River make up the four rivers managed by the National Forest Service. To float any of these rivers in the summer, people need to register and win a permit in the lottery system. Why is it so hard to pull a permit? Back in 2010, the registration changed to an online format, making it much easier for people to apply because they didn't have to mail in registration form and a check. Popularity of rafting has been on the rise since the change of the online reservations. Number of applicants for the Maine salmon more than tripled by 2023, and the Middle Fork rose by 120%. 2025, nearly 20,000 people applied for the permit lottery for the Middle Fork. There are 353 permits available.
That's 20,000 people apply for 353 permits,
making it a 1.79% chance of winning. The Maine had similar numbers, but it was even worse with a 1.7% chance.
That's crazy.
20,000 people and only 353. Now, most will then open up more permits.
Yeah.
More permits, more people, more damage, more, you know, you can't open up to more permits. You got to leave it where it is.
We are seeing parks in areas we've talked about in recent episodes where they're actually closing down parks. And there was one out west that we talked about. Was it Glacier Lake? They're closing down Glacier Lake for 2 years.
They're closing down places for just a couple of years to let them recover. Forest Service manages the number of permits to help keep these rivers and their ecosystems pristine and so that commercial boaters can get their allotment to make a living. In 2025, 22% of permits were won by Idahoans and the Middle Fork and the Maine. In total, 4,395 people from Idaho entered the lottery, with Colorado coming in second at 3,337 people. Next on the list with Oregon, followed up by Utah, Montana, and Washington. So everybody, that's pretty much close. One group from Switzerland scored the only international permit.
They had one international permit.
One international permit. Data show, would we consider it international in Canada?
I don't know. I assume so.
Huh. Data shows that people have a better chance if they select dates outside of late June and all of July. Some who don't score a permit can try to snag a cancellation if they're lucky. This requires checking regularly and if you have the ability to go on a trip on short notice. This is the best bet on getting a permit. Hell's Canyon of the Snake River has the best odds of the four rivers, while the Selway has the worst, with under 1% chance of winning. Selway Lottery gets announced on Sunday, February 15th. So it was just announced there. Donation to the Forest Service is required for every river permit application.
A donation.
So 20, and it doesn't say what the donation
recommended
is, but 20,000 permits times whatever the donation is. So even if it's a $10,000 donation, it's $200,000, right? If my math is right.
No, it's not.
And no, it's not? What's 20,000 times 10?
Oh, you said 10,000.
No, 20,000.
$10 donation.
$10 donation.
Oh, I heard you say $10,000 donation.
Oh, no, if I got to give a $10,000 donation, I had better be getting that permit because I pretty much just bought that permit for 10 grand.
Yeah, well, your math is right then. If with a $10 donation, you nailed it there.
$10 donation, carry the 67. less than a 2% chance. Wowzers.
So every time you want to go here, you got to plan for a backup.
Yep.
I guess we'll go somewhere else.
Yeah. I'm still looking at going to Moab.
That'd be neat.
There's some really nice paddling opportunities down there. It'd be good with two cars because there's a lot of, you got to organize shuttles.
Yes.
Yep. So one of them, you take two canoes on one vehicle, you drop one vehicle at the end, and then everybody drives up, and then you do like a day paddle or a 2 day paddle or whatever, and end up at the car at the end. You throw everything on there, go grab the launch vehicle, and then
vehicle drop logistics is such a pain in the butt,
right?
To plan all that.
I love doing loops just so
you kill
I don't.
Day just doing it. Exactly. Yeah. If you can do a loop, it's best.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. You definitely lose time having to. Well, that's like in Algonquin. Hey, I want to launch from the north part and travel all through down through the middle of Algonquin to get to Highway 60 and then go back up and around. That's a whole day to get up there.
And
back easy.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
Fortunately, there's a lot of outfitters that will shuttle you in their vehicle to, or will arrange that, hey, I parked here, pick up my car and take it somewhere else. They do that too. So there's a lot of options available.
I've done that where I've driven up somewhere, dropped me and my canoe and all my gear off, and then the outfitter has somebody that drives your vehicle all the way back because you're going to end up at the outfitter anyway at the end. And then, you end up pulling into their dock and your vehicle's there all ready to go and that sort of stuff. So, and it's been, parked somewhere where they're going to look after it sort of deal, right?
Yeah.
So, something that's been going on for the last few years and it seems to be becoming more prevalent, paddling fees.
Yes.
Canoeing, kayaking, and paddleboarding. Simple, carefree, spur-of-the-moment activities that many Oregonians?
Yes.
Well, it's Oregon.
Yeah, Oregonian.
Oregonians.
It's an Oregonian.
Are you sure?
I've been to Oregon, and
okay, we're going with Oregonians.
Yeah,
Oregonians.
Anybody, feel free to write us.
I'm going
to
flip it back and forth as we go. More expensive this year. New rules require operators of all small boats under 10 feet in length, whether plastic kayaks or inflatable paddle boards, to purchase and carry waterway access permits at a cost of $20 a year. That has sparked an effort to repeal the new fee. You can buy a lifetime kayak for $99, usually on a spring sale, and now you have to pay $20 access permit to use it. We think that's excessive, says Benjamin Roche, co-chief sponsor of Let Us Paddle. A lot of people are buying the stand-up paddle boards, the inflatable types, and again, $20 water access permit per year that you have to have, or you face a $114 fine.
Ooh, that's a big fine.
So the question is, do you try to get away with the $20 and not get a fine?
You get 6 years to, if you only get caught once every 6 years, it kind of pays for itself.
Kind of pays for itself. The Let Us Paddle Political Action Committee is gathering signatures from registered voters in an effort to put a measure on this November's ballot that, if approved by voters, would repeal the Waterway Access Permit Program. My husband and I have a powerboat. We paddle all the license and access fees on that powerboat. We also have two kayaks on top of that powerboat, and those kayaks are under 10 feet for a reason, because we didn't need a permit for those kayaks under 10 feet. Then they changed the rules on us. Petition circulator Wendy Mogstadt says, Shortly after the Oregon legislature approved HB 2982 and the governor signed, Mogstadt got involved. So now those two kayaks that are on our boat at the coast and three of them that we have at home. So there's another $100, right?
Yeah.
All of them are required to have permits on them, and that adds up really quick. Especially if you only use it once.
Like,
you know,
like what does the money go to? What is the benefit of paying the money? Like if they're maintaining access and drop off points and stuff like that, it kind of makes sense.
Right.
But if it's just going into the coffers, it's like, come on. Like, why are you nickeling and diming people for this kind of thing?
Yeah. The Lettuce Paddle Pack is conducting signature drives at outdoor sports shows this spring. Plan to gather signatures at busy boat ramps and weather warms. Organizers say they've collected about 10,000 signatures so far. They need 100,000 more by July 2nd to place the measure on the November ballot. The reaction has been great, Roach says. Most everybody that swings by is eager to sign. Few detractors, which there always is. There are some people who think kayakers and paddleboarders should pay their fair share, like boats and registration fees, and we get that. We just don't feel that a small paddle craft is a vector of invasive species. And see, this is where I disagree with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Because your small paddle craft, they have as much a chance of bringing through some of the invasive species
yes.
as the big boats do. Yep. The invasive species threats is real and costs money to combat with inspections of all boats, including canoes, kayaks, and paddleboards crossing state lines. Boats found to be contaminated with invasive species receive a hot water pressure bath to kill the invaders, mainly mussels, that attach to the boat hulls and ride in bilges and live wells, places that retain water. The zebra mussels and the golden mussel are the two they mostly concerned about. Those larvae need to be wet. They need to adhere to the hull or be in a live well or a wet bulge of a boat. Paddle craft like an inflatable paddleboards do not have live well or a bilge. They are usually deflated and wiped down. No. And put in a backpack. I know many people that have those things and they do not wipe them down. They just roll them up at the end of the day.
Yep.
Until next time. Small kayaks of the kind you find at your local hardware store are typically inverted, dumped out, put on the roof of a car, so they are not transporting the water that would be a vector for zebra mussels or other invasive species. Again, no.
It could be a vector.
Because if there's water in your kayak and you flip it upside down.
It's in the gunnels.
It's still
if you have aluminum gunnels, it's inside.
The lettuce paddle PAC describes itself as grassroots response to taxation without representation, an infringement on the rights of Oregonians to free and unfettered access to public places. It's going really well, Mogstad says. You heard my spiel as to what this petition is for. Typically, I don't get halfway through that, and someone says, oh yeah, that's stupid, I want to sign that. Some people just walk up and start signing. They recognize our flyers and they want to be part of that. Unless and until it is repealed by voters, the $20 waterway access permit for boats under 10 feet long is in effect. Of those $20, $12 go towards creating new access points that serve paddle sports, such as Miller's Landing in downtown Bend and Maupin City Park on the lower Deschutes River.
So they are spending the money for it.
$12 is going on that sort of stuff. That's fine. Remaining $8 is directed towards preventing invasive species from spreading into Oregon waterways and responding when they do. We've heard from a lot of sporting people that enough is enough. You're taxing and feeing us up to death. It's time to put a stake in it. Say, let's start to ratchet this back so people can affordably recreate in Oregon.
So, yeah, it is going to a cause. It is going for a purpose.
But to think that canoes and kayaks and stand-up paddle boards and stuff can't spread invasive species?
Absolutely they can.
You're wearing blinders.
Yeah.
I got to say you're wearing blinders because I've gotten home with my kayak on my roof and put it in the garage, and the next day I'll go move it around to give it a wipe down or something, and there's water inside.
Still.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because I've just flipped it upside down, and the water that was on the floor is now on the underside of the top.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sitting there.
Yeah.
So if I were to take it out next weekend to a totally different lake.
There could still be water.
There could still. And, look, that's still in there. I take my sponge and rink it into the water, which, like I say, I make sure I don't do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But other people, and like I say, there's new people to paddling out there that's the first thing they're going to do.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it becomes an issue.
I think where you see this as, like, the big thing with this fee, I think, is because it causes such a kerfuffle, and what it does is it educates people. People are going, what's this fee for? Why is this fee? So enough people get riled up, and there's that political action committee to let us paddle, or there's we ourselves are talking about it. What it's doing is it's educating people about invasive species.
Yeah.
So even that alone, you are spreading word. It's like, oh, I didn't think I could be the invasive species handler. And
even negative publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
There's or bad they say publicity? There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah.
Which I think can be wrong.
Yeah, but in this case, yeah, exactly. I mean, everybody's bitching about $20.
Yeah, so it does get people saying, well, what's it for? Where's the money going? Which is me at the first of this when we first started talking about it. It was like, oh, is it going to build access points? Which, yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
It's also going to help reduce invasive species transfers and
education.
I think education is the biggest component. It makes people more aware. What's this fee for? Is it money grab? Well, no, it's actually serving a purpose. It's
because there's more than just the zebra mussels and that are there.
There's lots of stuff.
There's like a lot of the weeds and stuff like that too that are invasive species.
Absolutely.
So, if I go out once a year and have to pay $20, yeah, I'm going to be annoyed.
Oh yeah,
because then I'm going to go $20. Nah, I'm and at some point it's either my boat's just going to sit there forever or I'm going to sell it.
Yeah,
but if I go out 30 times in a year, especially me who I go out in the winter, the spring, summer, fall, that sort of stuff, $20. Okay, that's fine. I'll pay my $20 and be done with it. I'd rather not have to, of course.
Absolutely.
But if I know that is definitely going into, access points and helping with invasive species, and any government people listening to our podcast, that does not give you the reason now to go and say, hey,
good idea.
$20.
They just justified it.
He's willing to pay $20. I'm sure he'll pay $30.
Yeah,
you can eat my shorts, right? So, yeah, if you're in Oregon, you got to pay that $20. Like I say, I can see the fact that nobody wants to pay it, but make sure you're telling everybody the real deal and don't just give little bits and pieces of, because there's more than just zebra mussels, invasive species, right? And like I say, what I do with my boats, because of the education I have and everything like that, is not necessarily what the new people are. And we see that when we go into Algonquin Park and stuff like that, into backcountry campsites.
Yeah.
The people that have been doing it for years, they keep a clean campsite, they hang their food or whatever, or bolt it to a tree or whatever they do. The newer people, they don't have that education like we have.
They don't know
that
the
they're just throwing stuff.
Yeah.
Everywhere and until they learn it.
Yeah. There is no room service on a backcountry campsite. You have to clean it up yourself.
Right? So, anyway, like I say, this is just something that's been sort of moving across the countries.
And we've...
as it goes.
And we've talked... we've brought this up so many times during episodes recently and in the past, where there are more and more fees, more and more this, that, the other thing. And so in the end, it's education, I think, is the biggest bonus or plan that these things are paying for.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I say, most of the time for these sort of things when they're saying, well, but just the way they're presenting their arguments.
Yes. Oh, my God. Big Brothers wants more money from us.
Yeah. I've got a side against you on this one. I'll pay the $20.
Yeah.
So it's rare that I say that. But in this particular case, if you're not giving all the facts, then I'm not siding with you. Simple as that. But anyway. I got the last thing is the outdoor shows that are happening this coming weekend. Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show.
Yes.
Going to be there probably Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday for sure.
Yep.
If you happen to see us wandering around aimlessly,
lost.
Like we're lost.
If we find us lost, point us in the right direction.
Yeah. definitely stop by and stop us and say hello. Say, hey, I listen to your podcast. And we don't bite. We're happy to talk about it and that sort of stuff. February 20th, 22nd, International Center, Mississauga by the airport. Everything for the outdoor fun and travel. Lots of speakers, different stages. The water demo pool. See some paddling demos. I wonder if Kevin Callan's going to be giving a demo there.
Well, we made fun of him last week on saying...
So let's make fun of him again.
You were talking about him tipping over and drowning.
That the amount of airtime a video like that would get. It would be awesome. So how was the show? Kevin tipped his boat.
Poor Kevin.
Boop, 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 boop. Hey, Kevin. How you doing, buddy? Are you still wet? outdooradventureshow.ca for more details. And for those who live in Vancouver, Calgary, and Montreal,
they have
there,
there
is a version there. Quiet Adventure Symposium.
So 2 weeks away.
A couple weeks away, Saturday, February 28th. Part of me still has a little
I know
that wants to run for that border.
Yeah.
31st Annual Symposium. Held at the Michigan State University Farm Bureau Pavilion in Lansing, Michigan, 9 till 5:30 on the Saturday, quietadventures.org. Lots of paddling, hiking, conservation area,
yep, you name it.
Stuff, some gear, especially paddles and whatnot that you can get there, handmade paddles, some gorgeous stuff,
yep.
Mustache paddles.
And there's always the knife and axe guys.
Knife and axe guys, yeah, hammocks, stuff like that. A lot of demos and stuff. Captain Peter Frank is going to be there,
yes,
to talk about his great loop. We did the podcast with him when he was up our way last fall. Don't forget to check out the rabbit show next door. Hop across that little divider and go check out the rabbit. They also have stuff like llama, alpaca, like socks and
yes,
stuff like yeah, that from the fur and stuff yeah, like that, which is pretty cool. We got my mom a pair of those and she likes them. They're nice and warm.
Yeah.
The Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, April 25th to
haven't fixed that yet.
Haven't fixed that. The 56th. 25th to the 56th.
Of April.
Of April.
It's a long month.
That's like almost a four-week weekend there. Nepean, Ontario, the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission, free parking, outdoor gear and equipment and paddle craft. AdventureOttawa.ca for a lot more info. So, yeah, April 25th and 26th. I really got to fix that. Of all the things that I forgot to do.
It works.
It works. We all know. Yeah, it's like a 26-day weekend. I can handle a 26-day
weekend. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. See you on Monday. 27 days from now.
We should go to a 4-day work week.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. 4 days at work. One day you got to work from home if you're able to.
Hmm.
And then a couple of days off. That'd be good.
Yeah, think right? Firefighters work from home.
Oh, that'd be... Yeah. Well, they got a beeper.
Yes.
Yeah. And when their beeper goes off, they got to run down to the fire station and...
Yeah.
Or just meet right at the...
Meet at the fire.
Meet at the fire.
Yeah. Volunteers do that.
Right?
Yeah.
See? It's doable.
Pilots.
It's doable.
Work from home. Pilots work from home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got a flight to Kuala Lumpur this weekend. Yeah, I'm working from home.
Hook up the remote simulator.
That'd be awesome. There's ways around everything, my friend. That's all I got this week. You got anything else?
I have nothing to add.
All right. Well, let us begin our
second decade.
Year.
We're
our second decade.
We're working into our second decade.
Hot diggity dog. If you want to find us, you can find out more about us at paddlingadventuresradio.com, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Just Google Paddling Adventures Radio and it'll give you about 150 different places. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can download or stream all our episodes there. A lot of people are actually streaming it on YouTube now.
Okay.
If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.